Chapter 10. Filled with the collected energy of a sun, the explosion of the solar collector bloomed like the birth of a new star. Fiery clouds of debris and released potential spread over hundreds of kilometers, shattering warships that had risked passing close to the collector in an attempt to gain some advantage in the battle raging in the star's corona. Nearly 1,000 starships jockeyed and maneuvered above the Carolus star, each moving in its own intricate ballet as blinding streaks of lance fire and the looping contrails of torpedoes crisscrossed the space between them. Finally brought to battle by the Iron Hands, the Diasporex fleet had turned like a beast at bay, protecting its young. Heavily armed warships of ancient design formed a cordon around the solar collectors, while smaller, faster escorts attempted to run the blockade of Imperial vessels and remove their invaluable charges from the battle. Some slipped past, but many more were bracketed by relentless bombardments and reduced to so much scrap metal within moments of being acquired by the gunners of the 52nd Expedition. Fiery explosions flared, blooming brightly as the fires of their deaths ignited the clouds of flammable gases that filled the space around the star. The Fist of Iron led the charge of the Iron Hands, bludgeoning a path through the centre of the Diasporex fleet and battering the enemy ships with devastating broadsides. Mass drivers and battery after battery hammered the Diasporex ships, and plumes of venting oxygen bled into space from the wounded vessels. Spurts of nuclear fire speared up from the surface of the star, clouds of radioactive material following in their wake and wreathing the battle in streaks of light. Smaller fighters and bombers were ripped apart by these random acts of the star's violence, their ordnance erupting in flames and sending them spinning through space like tumbling meteors. An alien warship duelled with the Iron Hands, unknown weapons hurling bolts of energy that melted through the hulls of the Imperial ships, scrambled their weapon systems, or slaved them to the enemy fleet. Confusion reigned as vessels of the Imperial fleet turned their weapons on Allied ships, until Ferus Manus understood what was happening and led the Fist of Iron once more into the thick of the fighting to destroy the enemy ship with a devastating close-range torpedo volley. The alien vessel broke apart in a rippling flurry of explosions, torn asunder from within as each torpedo smashed through bulkhead after bulkhead before detonating in the heart of its target. Despite the best efforts of the Diasporex fleet masters, the cordon of ships thrown out before the solar collectors could not hold back the force of the Iron Hands. Trapped against the furnace of the Carolus star, the democratic multi-part confederacy of the Diasporex was proving to be its undoing. Set against the iron leadership of Ferus Manus, their many captains could not coordinate quickly or ingeniously enough to outwit the tactical ferocity of a Primarch. The fiery halo surrounding the star became the grave of thousands of aliens and humans of the Diasporex, as the 52nd Expedition tore through them, venting the anger and fury of the last few months in an unstoppable flurry of battery fire and missiles. Ships of both sides burned, and if it was indeed the end of the Diasporex, then it would be an end worthy of epic tales yet to be written. The Ferum fought at the heart of the battle, Captain Balhan avenging his earlier failure in the fury of combat. More nimble than many of the warships of the Diasporex, he masterfully worked with the Armorum Ferris to manoeuvre his vessel to outflank enemy ships and attack them from their vulnerable rear. Devastating battery fire crippled the engines of his prey, and as the Diasporex ships wallowed helplessly, the Armorum Ferris swept in and tore the defenceless vessels apart with point-blank broadsides. Not that the Diasporex were not reaping a fearsome tally. Although their ships fought as individuals in this battle, as opposed to a fleet, it did not take long before a great warship in the centre of the Diasporex fleet began to take charge, a hybridized vessel that bore the hallmarks of human design and embellishments of a grotesque alien nature. Even as Ferus Manus recognized the moment the hybrid vessel took command, the Diasporex fleet again displayed its teeth. Coordinated waves of bombers crippled Medusa's glory, and improbably destroyed the Heart of Gold. A daring boarding action upon the Iron Dream was barely repulsed, though the ship was left helpless and was ultimately destroyed by an almost casual broadside from the hybrid command ship. The greatest loss to the Imperial fleet came when the battle barge Metallus was destroyed by an enemy lance that tore through its reactor core and vaporized it in an explosion that rivaled that of the first solar collector. Dozens of nearby ships were caught in the terrifying violence of its destruction, tumbling to their deaths in the star's fiery embrace. As the nuclear fire of the ship's demise faded, a gap of empty space was all that remained. The fleet masters of the Diasporex were not slow to see the opportunity this presented. Within minutes, the escorts began changing course to lead the precious solar collectors through the gap. It was a bold move, and the heavier warships of the Diasporex began to disengage from the fleet of the Iron Hands. It was a bold move indeed, and might have worked, had not the ships of the Emperor's children chosen that moment to unmask their presence and begin their own destructive work amongst the ships of the Diasporex. The boarding torpedo shook with the violence of its delivery, a thundering metal tube hurled through space in a journey that would end either in death or a rush of battle. Though his body still ached, Solomon relished the chance to take the fight to the enemy once more, despite the great unease with which he had greeted Fulgrim's order that they were to be unleashed on the Diasporex via boarding torpedo. Normal Astartes practice for starship assaults called for specialist troops to make lightning hit-and-run attacks on critical systems, such as the gun decks or engines, before making a rapid withdrawal. But this mission was to capture the command deck and end the battle in one fell swoop. Such actions were dangerous at the best of times, but to cross the gulf of space between fighting vessels in the midst of such a furious conflict seemed foolhardy to Solomon. Fulgrim had surprised everyone when he had marched onto the bridge at the commencement of the fighting, clad in the full panoply of battle instead of the cloak of a ship's captain, and surrounded by his Phoenix Guard. His armour had been magnificently polished, and Solomon saw many new embellishments worked into the gleaming plates of his greaves. The golden eagle on his breastplate shone with a dazzling brilliance, and his pale features were alight with the prospect of battle. Solomon noticed that instead of the golden fireblade, the silver-hilted sword he had taken from Laren was belted at his side. "Ferus Manus may have instigated this fight without us," Fulgrim had shouted, "but by Chemos, he's not going to finish it without us." A fierce energy had suddenly seized the bridge of the Pride of the Emperor, and Solomon felt it surge from warrior to warrior like an electric current. Julius especially had leapt to obey the Primarch's orders, as had Marius, though with a dogged determination rather than with genuine enthusiasm. Rather than complete the destruction of the Diasporex from afar, as the tactical position, as far as Solomon could see, would dictate, Fulgrim had elected to take the fight to the Diasporex directly, and ordered the ships of the 28th Expedition to surge forward to engage them at close range. Information from the Fist of Iron had revealed the presence and location of the enemy command ship, and Fulgrim had immediately hurled the Pride of the Emperor towards it. Ferus Manus may have started the fight prematurely, but the Emperor's children would win the lion's share of the glory by ripping the heart from the Diasporex. Not only that, but Fulgrim would once again lead them. Though at first such a strategy seemed vainglorious to Solomon, he couldn't deny the thrill he felt as he led his men into harm's way, despite his loathing of travelling in a boarding torpedo. Gaius Cafan sat opposite him, his eyes fixed on the rudimentary controls that guided their headlong rush through space, and his mind on the battle to come. Solomon and the warriors of the second were to smash into the hybrid vessel first and secure the perimeter, before Fulgrim and the first reinforced their position and pushed through the enemy ship towards the bridge in order to destroy it with demolition charges. In theory, what little tactical structure remained of the Diasporex fleet would be shattered by the loss of the command ship, and the remainder picked off at the Imperial fleet's leisure. Impact in 10 seconds, said Cavan. Everyone brace, ordered Solomon. As soon as the entrance is clear, spread out and kill anything you find. Good hunting. Solomon closed his eyes and hunched down into the brace position as the torpedo slammed into the side of the enemy vessel, the inertial compensators reducing the impact from lethal to merely bone-jarring. He heard the booming thuds as the shaped charges on the torpedo's nose detonated in sequence, blasting a path through the thick superstructure of the ship. The force of the detonations and the howling screech of metal juddered down the length of the torpedo. Solomon felt his vision blur and his freshly healed body protest at the force of their arrival and deceleration. It felt like an age, though it was surely no more than a few seconds, before they stopped, and the last charge on the nose cone blew the front of the torpedo clear. The assault ramp clanged down into a fiery inferno of twisted, blackened metal and ruptured corpses. Go! Bellowed Solomon, slamming the release on his grav harness and surging to his feet. Everyone out! Go! He snatched up his handcrafted bolter, knowing that this was the most vulnerable portion of any torpedo-borne assault. The shock and horror of their arrival had to be exploited to prevent any resistance from materializing. Solomon charged down the ramp into a tall, high, vaulted chamber of blackened columns and walls of dark wooden panelling. The wood blazed, and several of the columns groaned under the weight of the roof, many of the other columns having been destroyed by the impact of the boarding torpedo. Smoke and flames billowed, though the auto-senses of Solomon's armour easily compensated for the low visibility. Charred corpses filled the chamber, torn to shreds by the impact, and other bodies writhed and screamed in agony as flames consumed them. Solomon ignored them, already hearing distant crashes that told him the rest of his company was smashing through the hull of the vessel. The warriors of the second spread out as he saw movement at either end of the chamber, enemy warriors coming to repulse their attack. Solomon grinned as he saw that they were already too late. Flat bangs of bolter fire tore the defenders to their right apart, but an answering volley scythed from the opposite side, punching one of his warriors from his feet with a smoking crater in his chest. Solomon turned his own bolter to face the new threat and fired off a rapid burst of shots that sent a bizarre quadruped creature slumping to the ground. More shots and screams sounded, and within moments the chamber was alive with booming gunfire and explosions. "Gaius, take the right and secure it," he said, moving off to the other end of the chamber as more of the ship's crew rushed to plug the breach in their vessel's defences. Solomon killed another enemy, this time seeing his target properly for the first time, as his warriors forced the enemy back in a crackling hail of bolter rounds. Control bursts of gunfire cleared the entrances to the chamber of enemies as Solomon examined the corpse of one of the aliens. Gaius Cafan organized the Astartes to secure the chamber from counter-attack and ready it for the arrival of reinforcements. The dead alien was a heavily muscled quadruped with ochre skin, scaled like a snake's, but harder and more chitinous. Portions of its limbs had been augmented with mechanized prosthetics, and its head was elongated. It appeared to be eyeless, its mouth a dark tooth-ringed circle filled with waving feelers. A bizarre armature was affixed to its back, connected via a series of looping cables to its spine and many-fingered forelimbs. The other dead creatures were of the same species, but others amongst the chamber's defenders were clearly human, their twisted bodies immediately recognisable despite the mutilations done to them by the breaching charges of the torpedo. That humans could fight alongside aliens was incomprehensible to Solomon. The very idea of such bizarre creatures working, living and fighting alongside pure-blood humans descended from the people of old Earth was repugnant. "We're ready," said Cafan, appearing at his shoulder. "Good," said Solomon. "I don't understand how they could have done it." "Done what?" asked Cafan. "Fought alongside Xenos." Cafan shrugged, the movement awkward in battle plate. "Does it matter?" "Of course it matters," said Solomon. "If we understand what motivates someone to turn from the Emperor, then we can stop it happening again." I doubt any of this lot has even heard of the Emperor, said Kafan, tapping his boot against the charred body of a human soldier. Can you turn from someone you've never heard of? They may not have heard of the Emperor, but that doesn't excuse this, said Solomon. It should be self-evident that associations with alien filth like this can only end badly. It was our manifesto when we joined the Crusade. Suffer not the alien to live. Solomon knelt beside the dead man and lifted his limp head from the deck. His skin was bloody and his midsection had been burst open from the inside. His armour was an elaborate weave of kinetotropic mesh and energy-reflective plates that had singularly failed to stop the brutality of a bolter round. "Take this man," said Solomon. "The blood of old Earth pours from his veins. And but for his associations with aliens, we might have been allies in furthering the cause of the Great Crusade. All this killing is a terrible waste of what might have been, of the brotherhood we might have forged with these people. But there can be no equivocation in the fight for survival. There is only right and wrong."
"And he chose wrongly?"
"His commanders chose wrongly, and that is why he is dead."
"So are you saying that it's his commanders who are to blame, and that we might have been friends with this man if circumstances had been different?"
Solomon shook his head.
"No. Such evil can only succeed when good men stand by and allow it to. I do not know how the Diasporex came to be integrated with aliens, but if enough people had stood against the decision, it could never have happened. Their fate is their own, and I feel no remorse in killing them. All warriors who follow their leader's orders must carry the weight of it also."
Gaius Kafan said,
"And I thought Captain Verosian was the thinker."
Solomon smiled and said,
"I have my moments."
Before he could say anything further, a voice in his helmet said, "Captain Demeter, is the landing zone secure?" And he straightened as he recognised the voice of his Primarch.
"It is, my lord," said Solomon.
"Stand ready. I shall be with you directly," replied Fulgrim.
Though the Diasporex were trapped between the Carolus Star and the combined Imperial fleets, there was yet the will to fight, and while the command ship still lived, there would be no easy victory. More and more of the Solar Collectors were exploding as their escorts were stripped away, crippled, and sent spinning down into the star. Some smaller vessels slipped past the Imperial cordon, but they were an irrelevance next to the larger battleships that still fought with undimmed fury. The pride of the Emperor did battle with tactics straight from a naval strategy textbook, Captain Lemuel Eisel commanding with methodical precision, if not flair. The rest of the Emperor's children fleet followed his example and engaged the foe in perfect attack patterns, destroying the enemy in efficient, elegant dissections. In contrast, the ships of the Iron Hands fought like the iron wolves of Medusa, tearing their enemy apart in daring hit-and-run attacks that saw them destroy many more vessels than the ships of the Emperor's children. Through the heart of the firestorm, the Firebird soared like the most graceful of birds, its fiery wings leaving vortices of flaring gases in its wake. Like a twisting comet trailing streamers of flame behind it, the assault craft seemed to glide easily through the explosions and streaking lines of deadly gunfire that painted the raging inferno of the star's corona. As though realizing the danger the fiery assault craft represented, a pair of Diasporex cruisers altered course to intercept it, and as the web of guns and lasers tightened around the Firebird, its doom seemed assured. The Primarch's craft twisted desperately to avoid the storm of fire, but it was running out of room, and each explosion burst ever closer to it. Even as the cruisers closed in to unleash the coup de grace, a monstrous shadow enveloped them, and the Fist of Iron sailed between them, a series of ruinous broadsides rippling from its dozens of gun decks. At such close range, the results were devastating. The first cruiser was torn apart as a chain reaction of explosions bloated its superstructure from within, and it broke up in a shower of burning plasma and foaming oxygen.
The second ship survived long enough to return fire at the Fist of Iron, killing hundreds of its crew and inflicting terrible damage on Ferus Manus's flagship before it was crippled by a second broadside that obliterated it in a huge explosion. Saved from destruction, the Firebird hurtled through the crucible of battle towards the hybrid command vessel that Solomon Demeter's warriors had secured. Close in, defense turrets desperately tried to engage the Firebird, as though the vessel's crew sensed that their doom came towards them on these wings of fire. But none came close to Fulgrim's craft, such was its deadly grace and maneuverability. Like a great bird of prey settling on its quarry, the Firebird swooped in over the bridge section of the hybrid vessel, and its landing claws descended to clamp firmly onto the upper hull of the ship. Searing blasts of melter fire bored through the outer hulls of the enemy vessel, and clouds of crystalline oxygen billowed from the ship's inner skins. No sooner had the armoured plates of the outer hull been penetrated than a docking umbilical punched through the soft inner hull of the ship, creating a pressurised passageway that would allow the Primarch of the Emperor's children to wreak bloody havoc on the Diasporex. Julius followed his Primarch and hammered down onto the deck of the enemy vessel in time to see Fulgrim draw his shimmering silver blade. His commander rose to his full height as 100 or more enemy soldiers, humans and loping beasts that went on all fours, rushed towards them. Julius felt his heart surge with excitement and battle lust as weapons blazed. But Fulgrim threw up his sword to send the bolts of energy skidding across the walls and ceiling. Lycaon and more of Julius's warriors dropped from the belly of the Firebird, and he watched in awe as the living avatar of battle that was his Primarch charged into his enemies. Fulgrim's magnificence still had the power to make him catch his breath, and the honour of going into battle with such a godlike figure was beyond measure. Fulgrim raised his pistol, a weapon with the power of a caged sun, which had been crafted in the forges of the Urals to unleash a hail of molten bolts. Blazing light filled the hallway, the gleaming silver of its structure reflecting the brilliance of his shots as they tore through meat, bone, and armour. Men and aliens screamed as the Primarch's shots tore through them. "Spread out! Open fire!" he shouted, though his warriors needed no orders. The first volleys of bolter fire were unleashed, sawing through the ranks of the aliens. Return fire felled one of the first, but by then it was already too late, as yet more of the Astartes poured from the Firebird and began the slaughter. "Captain Demeter!" cried Fulgrim over the vox, laughing at the sheer joy of being in battle once more. "You have my position. Join me. This will be my finest hour." Solomon led his warriors from the cavernous space the boarding torpedo had punched into, setting a brisk pace through the halls of the enemy ship to join his Primarch. He could hear the sounds of gunfire from all around as the other members of his company fought their way to link up with him. Sporadic battles erupted as the ship's defenders attempted to prevent the assaulters from gathering their strength, but it was a hopeless task. The torpedoes had struck widely enough so that they could not contain the threat without spreading themselves dangerously thin. Warriors of the second punched through enemy defensive positions, and the more Astartes that joined the fighting wedge he had aimed at the ship's bridge, the more inevitable the victory became. He could see the blue glows on his visor that represented Fulgrim and Julius, knowing they would also be heading for the bridge. In any assault where warriors had to board an enemy ship, the key was to get in and out quickly before any counterattack could be launched. Solomon knew that missions to attack the bridge of a starship were always the bloodiest, for such an objective was always the most heavily defended. Whether it was blind luck or the skill of Gaius Cafan at the torpedo's controls, he didn't know, but they had boarded much closer to the bridge than he would have believed possible, circumventing the bulk of the ship's defensive architecture. More troops would be racing to intercept them, but with the force led by the Primarch and Julius converging on the bridge as well, it would be too late to stop them. Solomon slowed his advance as he approached a four-way junction and saw yet more Astartes in the colours of the second coming from the passageway opposite. Until now, he hadn't realised how much it had rankled, missing the final fight on Laren. If there really were gods of battle, then they had offered him an incredible opportunity for glory. Solomon laughed as he sent them a playful nod of thanks. He reached the edge of the crossroads and ducked his head around the corner, seeing a defensive position at the end of the narrow passageway. Perhaps a dozen or so enemy soldiers held a strong point formed from white steel barriers, though there were sure to be more men out of sight. An automated gun turret was fixed to the ceiling, and the barrel of a heavy rotary cannon protruded through a firing slit in the barricade. Solomon ducked back as a deafening hail of shots roared down the corridor, and blazing traceries of fire ripped into the steel next to him. Sparks and shards of metal flew.
"Well," he said, "they're ready for us."
He turned and waved Cafan forward, handing him his bolter as he said,
"Gaius, someone's going to have to go up the centre."
Even though both warriors were helmeted, Solomon could sense Cafan's reaction.
"Let me guess," said Cafan. "You?"
Solomon nodded and said,
"I'll need cover."
"You're serious?"
asked Cafan, pointing to the torn metal at the corner of the junction.
"Didn't you see what happened?"
"Don't worry," Solomon said. "It'll be fine if I have all of you covering me. Just tell me when you're going to fire, eh?"
Cafan nodded wearily and said,
"I know I want command, but not through you getting yourself killed to prove a point."
Solomon drew his sword, flexing his shoulders in preparation for the brutal ferocity of close-quarters combat.
"You'll get command," he promised, "but I'm not planning on dying here."
"Can we at least use grenades first?" asked Cafan.
"If it will keep you happy, then yes."
Seconds later, a trio of grenades arced up the corridor. Solomon waited until he heard the clatter of them landing. Defensive corridors that led to the bridge of a starship were designed to be too long to hurl grenades the length of, but this vessel had been designed in an age before the advent of space marines, and all three were hurled with a strength easily able to reach the barricades. The grenades detonated simultaneously with powerful concussive booms that engulfed the defenders in smoke and flame. Even as the sound registered, Solomon ducked around the corner and ran as fast as he could towards the maelstrom of smoke and screams that boiled at the end of the corridor. His superior senses made out the whirring of the automated gun as it prepared to open fire, and he pistoned his arms to get as far along the corridor as he could before it tore him apart.
"Down!"
shouted Cafan behind him, and he hurled himself forward onto his front, skidding along the floor and slamming into the steel barricade. Bolter fire echoed from the narrow walls, and he felt the whip of the passing shells as the air above him was filled with lethal gunfire. He heard the explosions of their detonations and the screams of dying men. Cafan shouted for another volley, and this time Solomon heard the crack and clang of splintering metal as the automated gun was torn from its mount. Solomon pushed himself to his feet and activated the blade of his sword in a roar of whirring teeth. The screams of injured men sounded over the crackle of flames and the echo of the bolter rounds. Solomon placed his free hand on the scarred barricade and vaulted over it. A burned soldier ran through the smoke as he landed, and Solomon swept his sword down, cleaving the man from collarbone to pelvis. He roared in fury as he chopped the blade through the torso of another man, giving his enemy no time to regroup or recover from the shock of his sudden appearance in their midst. His blade was a cleaver, hacking through his enemy's flesh and primitive armour, the teeth of his weapon shrieking as he killed. Shots fired at point-blank range ricocheted from his armour, and a press of bodies surrounded him, the diasporic soldiers' ignorance of an Astartes' lethality empowering them with doomed courage. Solomon struck out with his elbows and fist as well as his sword, smashing skulls from shoulders and crushing rib cages with every blow. In seconds, it was over, and Solomon lowered his bloody sword as the rest of his warriors advanced along the corridor towards him. His armour was streaked with blood, and the bodies of nearly 50 soldiers lay strewn around him, torn and bludgeoned to destruction in his fury.
"You're alive, then," said Kafin, waving warriors forward to secure their advance. "Told you I didn't plan on dying here," he said. "What now?" asked Kafin. "We push on. We're nearly at the bridge." "I knew you were going to say that."
"We're so close, Gaius," said Solomon. "After getting shot down on Laren, don't you feel the need to win back some glory? If we can take the bridge before anyone else, then that will be what everyone will remember, not that we missed out on Laren."
Kafin nodded, and Solomon knew that his lieutenant was as hungry for glory as he was. Solomon laughed and shouted, "We move on!"
Julius stumbled as a silver bolt of energy like liquid mercury struck his shoulder guard and ripped through the ceramite. The creature before him reared up on its hind legs, its powerfully muscled forearms reaching out to him as it fired its wrist-mounted weapon once more. He spun away from the shot, feeling the icy cold of it slash past him. Its yellowed skin pulsed a ruddy red on its underbelly, and Julius thrust his blade towards the alien's body as it attacked. Its speed was phenomenal, and its clawed forearm smashed into his helmet, cracking it open from chin to temple. His vision dissolved into static, and he rolled away from the blow, ripping his helmet off as he rose to his feet with his sword extended before him. The beast before Julius slashed at him again, and he grinned in pleasure at the thrill of fighting an opponent that truly tested his skills. The sounds of battle rang in his ears, and he could hear the blood pounding in his veins as he danced away from the beast's lethal talons. He spun around another slash of the alien's claws and brought his sword down on its neck, shearing its head from its body. A spray of bright arterial blood drenched Julius as the creature toppled to the deck. The blood was hot on his lips, the alien reek of it thick in his nostrils, and even the ache in his head felt wondrously real, as though he was experiencing pain for the first time. All around him, the warriors of the First struggled with the loathsome aliens as they fought through the silver halls of the ship to reach the bridge. He saw Lycaon struggling with another of the mighty quadrupeds and cried out as his equerry was smashed to the ground, his back clearly snapped in two at the impact. Julius forged his way through the battle towards Lycaon, already knowing it was too late for him as he saw how limply he lay. He dropped to his knees beside his equerry, allowing the grief to come as he removed Lycaon's helmet. His warriors finished the slaughter of the ship's defenders. Their surgical strike had been blunted by the counterattack of the eyeless alien beasts, but with Fulgrim at their head, there could be no stopping the Astartes. Fulgrim killed aliens by the dozen, his white hair whipping madly around his head like smoke as he fought. But they cared not for losses, surrounding the Primarch and his Phoenix Guard in an attempt to overwhelm them through sheer mass. Such a feat was impossible, and Fulgrim laughed as he clove through the aliens with his shimmering silver sword without difficulty, slaying them as easily as a man might crush an insect. The Primarch forged a path through the alien defenders for his warriors to follow, and their advance continued. Though Julius had felt great pride in his abilities as a warrior before, he had never felt such a physical joy in combat, such a vivid sensation of the brutality and the artistry of it all. Nor had he felt such excitement in grief. He had lost friends before, but the grief had been tempered by the knowledge that they had died warriors' deaths at the hands of a worthy foe. As he looked into Lycaon's dead eyes, he felt loss and guilt churning within him as he realized that, as much as he would miss his friend, he reveled in the sensations his death had stirred within him. Perhaps this awareness was a side effect of the new chemical that had been issued to the warriors of the Emperor's children, or perhaps his experience in the Lair Temple had awakened hitherto unknown senses that allowed him to reach such dizzying heights of experience. Whatever the reason, Julius was glad of it. The hatch that led to the bridge blew out with a hollow boom, the shaped charges taking a large portion of the superstructure with it. Smoke billowed like blood from a wound as Solomon plunged through the gaping tear in the fabric of the ship.
He had retrieved his bolter and fired from the hip as he charged. His warriors followed, fanning out behind him as a desultory volley of gunfire reached out to them. A stray bullet caught him on the shin, and he dropped to his knee as he lost his balance for a second. The bridge of the hybrid ship resembled the bridge of the Pride of the Emperor, insomuch as it retained the basic ergonomics of a starship's command centre, but where Fulgrim's ship was a perfect marriage of functionality and aesthetic, the Diasporex flagship was clearly from a time when such considerations were deemed irrelevant. Dark arches of iron comprised a series of domed enclosures in which the ship's crew worked, and from where the captain commanded his vessel. The glow of the Carolus star and the flares of the ongoing space battle could be seen through the armoured glass of the domes, sporadic flashes lighting up the bridge like a fireworks display. Ancient consoles winked with a multitude of warning lights, and Solomon could see that such technology was crude in comparison to that employed by the Imperium. A mix of deck crew and soldiers in mesh armour fired from behind hastily assembled barricades, but Solomon's warriors were already overwhelming them, pistol shots and bolter rounds slaughtering the last of their resistance. Solomon stood as the noise of battle faded and his warriors spread out to secure the bridge. The remainder of the crew stood helplessly by their consoles, hands raised in surrender, though their faces bore expressions of resigned defiance. Most were unarmoured, though Solomon saw that the officers wore what looked like ceremonial breastplates and were unarmed save for ornamental foils and light pistols.
"Take them," ordered Solomon, and Gaius Cafan formed details to secure the prisoners. The bridge had been taken, and the ship was theirs. His, he thought, with a mischievous smile as he lowered his bolter and took a moment to explore this strange ship, a vessel that had left old Earth thousands of years before his birth. A great, high-backed command chair sat on a raised platform below the central dome, and Solomon stepped onto it, seeing one of the strange quadruped creatures they had fought earlier strapped into the chair. Hundreds of cables, wires and needles pierced the creature's body, and as its eyeless face turned to look at him, he felt a creeping revulsion steal over him. Blood coated its upper body, and Solomon saw that a stray round had taken off the top of its skull. Blood oozed from its shattered cranium, and he was amazed that it could still be alive. Had this thing been the ship's captain? Its pilot? Its navigator? The alien creature let out a low moan, and Solomon leaned in close to hear its valediction, though he had no idea whether he would be able to understand it. Its mouth moved, and though no sound issued from its gullet, Solomon could hear its words as clearly as if they had been planted directly into his brain.
"All we wished was to be left alone."
"Step away from that Xeno creature, Captain Demeter," said a cold voice behind him. Solomon turned and saw the towering form of Fulgrim standing in the smoke-wreathed hole he had blown in the bridge wall. Behind the Primarch he saw Julius, his face a mask of blood, and Solomon felt a shiver of unease at the expressions of glacial anger he saw in both their eyes. Fulgrim strode onto the bridge, his sword and armour drenched in alien gore, and his eyes wild with the fury of battle. He surveyed the captured bridge and then looked up at the domed ceiling where the fires of battle reflected dully on his opaque, dark eyes. Solomon stepped down from the platform and said, "The ship is ours, my lord." Fulgrim ignored him and spun on his heel, marching from the bridge without a word. Fulgrim fought to control his fury as he marched away from the bridge, the blood pounding in his skull with such force that he feared it might burst through at any moment. His warriors parted before him, seeing his fists clenched and the veins in his face pulsing darkly against his alabaster skin. An amethyst fire built in his eyes, and a trickle of blood dripped from his nose as he gripped the hilt of his silver sword tightly. This was to have been his greatest triumph. Now it is ruined, first by Ferus Manus and then by Solomon Demeter.
No! He shouted, and nearby Astartes flinched at his sudden outburst to the air. The Fist of Iron saved us from destruction, and Captain Demeter fought with courage to win the honor of reaching the bridge.
Saved us? No, it was for his own self-aggrandizement that Ferris Manus prevented the destruction of the Firebird, not for altruism. And Demeter, he hungers for glory that ought to be yours.
Fulgrim shook his head and dropped to his knees.
No, he whispered. I can't believe it.
It is the truth, Fulgrim, and you know it. In your heart of hearts, you know it.